Hello, Iowa! Hello, everybody! Thank you, thank you. Well, look, I don't mean to start on a low, but it actually is a high. I began today giving a eulogy for my great aunt who is born and raised in Des Moines. For those of you who don't know, my great aunt and my grandmother who was born and raised in Des Moines, I am not the first of my family to be at the Iowa State Fair. The way the lore goes is that my grandmother and my great aunt, who I eulogized this morning, they actually competed in the Iowa State Fair during the Depression. Their story is, and I haven't fact-checked this, that they took second prize to Shirley Temple back then. And so the only thing I can say is I will not sing, but I will tell you this, I'm really proud of those Iowa roots. And as I said at the eulogy this morning, when we buried a 100-year-old Iowan, is that the story of this state is the story of America. My family came here, they were right after slavery, they were coal miners in Alabama, and they moved to a town called Buxton, Iowa. Many of you know Buxton because there's a book about it that calls it the American Utopia. It was a time in the early 1900s, late 1800s, where blacks migrating from the South and European immigrants joined together in an integrated town well before its time. It evidenced the best of who we are as a nation. Here were folks struggling, black and white, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, descendants of slaves who went down into a mine shaft to dig out of the earth their American dream. We are all Americans. We all come from humble backgrounds. In that town, the spirit was simply, we stand for each other. If a miner died back in Buxton, they would give up a day's pay, but they would actually go to work, but they would donate that day's pay to the survivor, to their children, to the family of the miner that was lost. It goes back to this ideal that we are Americans, not defined by our race or our religion, but our common commitment to the best of human ideals. We are a nation because even with our founders, these imperfect geniuses, who even in our earliest documents they called Native American savages, blacks were fractions of human beings, they elevated the highest principles of humanity. We in this nation broke with the course of human events. We are here because we're the oldest constitutional democracy, a people that said we're going to put the highest of human virtues literally in place in this society, where it's not about how you were born, where you were born. It's not about what religion you have or what race you are. In this country, we are one people with one destiny. We are one people with one cause. And now more than ever, in our nation, we have to get back to that ideal. It doesn't mean we surrender what we believe in. It actually means we double down on that. Our nation has never been free of bigotry and hate. It's never been free of the kind of violence we've seen in this last week. What has defined us is not that the fact that our gardens of our democracy have never been free of those weeds. It's how we came together to deal with them. We are a nation that has always led with a courageous empathy, with this desire to make this nation, to put more indivisible back into this one nation under God. And I want to say very plainly that this is a moral moment in America. Regardless of what your party is, there are forces every day trying to tear our country apart along racial lines or on partisan lines. That's not how we achieved such extraordinary achievements in the past. We are the nation that beat the Nazis. We are the nation that raised humanity and won going to the moon. We're the nation that mapped the human genome, and the nation that first put into this earth ideals like public education. We are a country that did those things together. And now more than ever, we need each other. We have to have a revival of civic grace. I'm running for president of the United States because I believe in us. And I believe this election is not a referendum on one guy in one office. This election is a referendum on who we are and who we must be to each other in the generation ahead. We have big challenges, America. We have the challenge of climate change. We have the challenge of a generation for the first time in our history with a lower life expectancy than the one before. We have a challenge that there are people in our nation who are working hard, whether they're farmers in fields, whether they're men and women at factories, whether they're waitresses in cities like mine who work full-time jobs but still find themselves with more month at the end of their money than money at the end of their month, because we have stripped the dignity from work in this country. We have got to get back to the nation we were. My grandfather was a union worker on an assembly line during the Depression and World War II. He stood side by side with white workers, joined together in the cause of a union and the idea that in this nation, if you work hard, if you play by the rules, you can have your American dream. It is time. It is time that this generation restores the very idea of this country, that this generation restores the American dream. And that's not going to be easy. To achieve that, we've got to not turn against each other, but turn towards each other. To do that, we've got to get rid of leaders that try to demean and degrade and pit Americans against each other. It is time to have leaders that speak to that revival of civic grace, to speak to our common values. Because if you're an American, I know you agree with me that no American should go without health coverage. It is an American right, not a privilege. If you are like me, you believe that public school teachers should be paid for the contributions that they're making. If you're like me, you believe that this is a nation where if you've worked all your life, you should be able to retire with dignity and security, not fear and insecurity. I don't care if you are a gun owner or not. We can unite as Americans and say it is outrageous that we now still live in a country where someone who wants to do harm, who seeks to do terrorist acts, can go on the internet or to a gun show and buy a weapon. We need universal background checks. Don't let people sell you a lie that we don't have common cause. In fact, in America right now, we have too much common pain. It's time that we get back to our sense of common purpose. It is time that we unite as a nation and understand that we need each other, that even our enemies abroad, like the Russians, are trying to use the internet that we invented. They're trying to use that to insinuate divisions amongst us. Our best response to those who are trying to tear us apart is to unite. Our best response to those who are trying to demean and degrade people because of the color of their skin or to the God we pray to is to elevate our brothers and sisters, no matter who they are. Our best response to the darkness of some is the light of the many. And now I tell you right now, this next election, I tell you, it's going to be a test for all of us. But if you give me a chance to be your nominee, I'm going to show that the way we beat bullies, like we beat Bull Connor in Birmingham, is not by fighting them on their turf and on them their terms. We didn't beat Bull Connor and others like him by bringing bigger dogs and bigger fire hoses. We answer dark times in our country not by showing the worst of who we are, but by elevating the best of who we are. This is the time that we need leaders, all of us, to call to the moral imagination of this country and indeed make us once again a nation with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. All right. All right. So I got a few more minutes left. And I'm not going to jump off this stage before I start eating a lot of fried stuff. I'm going to answer a question or two. And I'm going to answer right here, this person right here with the Nike hat on. She's asking this question that really, really frustrates us. That's actually a national security issue. She asked me about the child care crisis. Now, why do I say it's a national security issue? Well, our competitor nations, they actually believe in something really radical. They believe in science. And the science will tell you that the greatest natural resource any nation has is not oil, gas, or coal. The greatest natural resource in a global knowledge-based society is the genius of our children. Now, we seem to think about education now as just K through 12, and we used to lead the earth on educating our kids. Well, other countries know, they looked at what we were doing in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and said, we've got to expand the understanding of education, because science tells us the brain develops most between the time in the womb to the third or first year. And so we know the public school teachers here know our kids now globally are coming to school by the time they get to kindergarten, and they're already behind their global peers. We need to start valuing children from the earliest of stages. That means first and foremost, making sure that every woman in our country, regardless of their income, has access to prenatal care. It is shameful in America that we lead the planet Earth in infant mortality rates of the industrial nations, that we lead in maternal mortality rates. If I'm your president, not only will we have universal prenatal care, but we're going to make sure even low-income women have access to doulas and the other things that are necessary to be successful. And then when that child is born, we're going to make sure that we have affordable child care in this country once and for all. And we're going to make sure that we have universal preschool. And if I'm president of the United States, we're going to end the absurd reality where every industrial nation has this. Even Afghanistan and the Congo have this, but we don't. We will be a nation that has paid family leave once and for all. All right. I don't know what's in this bottle, but I'm drinking it. I'm going to go. I saw somebody over here with a question. Go ahead. Go ahead. Did you all hear what he said?
No.
He said, Corey, how is it a man like you is so handsome? And he said, I have the best haircut of any of the candidates in this race. I mean, we really should go from an opposite of what we have now. Look at Trump's hair. This is the answer. This is the antidote. In terms of haircut, I am the anti-Trump. He asked a great question. We started with our children, but let's now go to our elders. What we do here right now is shameful, the way we are looking at aging in our country. And I want to go over just a few things real quick. Number one, it is absurd, and I will end this, that we have a nation that says to an elderly person, you've worked your entire life to amass a little bit of money, a little bit of resources, a home to pass on to your children. But now we're going to say to you, if you want to qualify for Medicaid, you've got to go into the poorhouse, go through all of your savings, go into poverty before we're going to give you Medicaid. That is going to end under my leadership. We're going to make sure that we raise the income cap and the savings cap to make sure we can help people retire and have the end of their years with dignity. We're going to do more than that, though. Right now, we have a nation that does not prioritize those seniors who want to age at home. We have an institutional prioritization. We're going to change that to give seniors who want to age at home more resources to do so. And for those people that are home as a caregiver, as my mom was to my dad with Parkinson's and dementia, we don't honor those people who are caregivers of spouses or children with beautiful children with special needs. We don't honor them for the work that they are doing. Under my leadership, we're going to make sure that they qualify, like the earned income tax credit. That is work, and you will get thousands of dollars back of your money back. Qualify for that as well. And the last thing I want to say about retirement is we're going to end the reality in this country that we have for millions and millions of seniors where they've worked all their lives, and then they retire into poverty because their Social Security checks don't go far enough. Under my leadership, we are going to make sure that no senior is poor. And how are we going to do that? Well, people will tell you, many people in the Republican Party will tell you, oh, Social Security is insolvent, that this entitlement is not secure. Well, number one, it's not an entitlement. People have been paying into it all their lives. And the problem is that the Social Security tax, as it is right now, is a regressive tax. People who are at the lower income, making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, pay more into that tax than people making $1 million a year. We're gonna make Social Security solvent by lifting the cap on the highest income earners in America. And we're gonna use those resources to give people in our country who are poor and retired bigger Social Security checks as well. All right, yes, right here in front of me. She asked, her question was, is how will I stand up and fight for LGBTQ rights in our public schools? And the thing everybody should know on so many of these questions with our candidates, we should be asking them, what have they been doing to fight for LGBTQ Americans in public school? And since I was a mayor of my city, before some of our top people in the Democratic Party had evolved on this issue, in Newark, New Jersey, I was fighting for my LGBTQ kids. I fought to make sure that we created after-school centers that were safe spots for them. I made sure that they saw their mayor at a time when we had such violence against LGBTQ Americans. We're still in a moment now where about 30% of LGBTQ kids admit missing school because of fear for their safety. Where our homeless kids in America, LGBTQ kids, make up about 40% of our homeless kids. This is outrageous, higher suicide rates. When I was mayor, the second flag that I raised in front of City Hall after the American flag was the Pride flag. I wanted them to know. And so I'm gonna tell you right now, the first thing I'm gonna do is get us a Secretary of Education that's actually worked in public schools. And we're gonna use the Division of Civil Rights in the Department of Education to boldly stand up for the safety, the security, and the protection of all of our children, and make sure that when public education in America, every child should be safe. We should honor and celebrate the potential, the beauty, and the wonder of all of our children, no matter what their background is, and that's a commitment I'm making. All right. I know I'm in trouble here because I'm gonna have to say this. I love your hat. I grew up in the era of Chris Chambliss, Reggie Jackson. You got my team on. Go ahead.
I grew up in Bayonne, but I'm wondering whether you would cut the defense budget.
Wow. This is a really deep question right now. And I think we need to have an honest conversation about this really quick. She said to me, are you willing to talk about cutting the defense budget? And I wanna say this is a deep question because what we've seen in the last two decades with these forever wars is that we're spending money in ways most Americans aren't even realize we're spending from our defense budget. You know, I stood with a group of senators and said enough that we have American military planes refueling Saudi Arabian planes to drop American bombs on Yemenese children. Tens of thousands of children in that country have been dying. We have to understand that we live in a nation where we are engaging in wars overseas that so many Americans don't know about. About 2 years ago, many people woke up when four of our soldiers died in Niger. And most Americans were like, we have soldiers in Niger? We need to get back to what the Constitution says, that a president cannot engage in war and military activity without getting permission from Congress, the people's election. So I could tell you that I'm gonna do two things. I'm gonna end this kind of wars that we're doing all over our country. This is a president that bombed the Assad regime in violation, I believe, of what is the idea about the president needing an authorization of the use of military force. I'm gonna end that, and that alone is gonna reduce the amount of money we're spending overseas. But even more than that, I'm gonna make sure that we return in this country to not leading with bombs and military intervention. Even Donald Trump's first Secretary of Defense said that if you cut the State Department, if you cut diplomacy, if you cut foreign aid, then you're gonna have to buy me more bullets. We need to get back to being a nation that leads with our values, that stands with our allies, that creates security, not simply through military strength, but through the moral strength of this nation. That's what I'm gonna do. End military waste, end military overreach, and make sure that we are safe and secure, not by violating our values, but because we live by them. Thank you, Iowa. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.